A broadcast service of City College and the San Diego Community College District. This is Jazz FM 88.3 KSDS San Diego. I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art. Support for Inside Art comes from the members of San Diego's Jazz 88.3. This week on Inside Art, we'll meet the composer of a spellbinding multimedia song cycle reflecting on America's tragic history of cotton. But first, a new documentary now streaming on Prime Video chronicles the extraordinary jazz history of Detroit and the dynamic city that produced it. The Best of the Best, Jazz from Detroit, celebrates the scores of Motor City musicians who've influenced the entire field of jazz, while tracing the city's dramatic rise and fall as an industrial power and the struggles and triumphs of its resilient African-American community. All About Jazz calls The Best of the Best, Jazz from Detroit, a beautiful touchstone for all things Detroit and the music that has risen from its iconic history. Joining me is the film's producer and writer Mark Stryker, a longtime Detroit Free Press classical and jazz journalist and author of the award-winning book Jazz from Detroit, which inspired the making of this acclaimed documentary. Mark, it's great to have you on Inside Art.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I got my list in front of me. I just wrote these down from watching the film, and just the extraordinary talent that people will know, Hank and Elvin Jones and Thad Jones and Milt Jackson, Yusef Lateef, Barry Harris, Kenny Burrell, Donald Byrd, Ron Carter, Joe Henderson. I could go on. What an amazing output from this place.
It really is extraordinary when you start listing the names, writing them down, and taking a look. It really proves the point which the film tries to make, which is that you cannot tell the history of jazz without also telling the history of jazz from Detroit. We've just produced too many influential musicians that have literally shaped the course of the music over the last century. And one of the things that's so special about the city beyond that is that we continue to help shape the music. You know, this is a tradition that's ongoing, it's living, it's breathing. You know, if you watch the Colbert Show every night, you see the bass player in the band, in the studio band, is Andia Owens. She's a young Detroiter. J.D. Allen, the saxophonist, is from Detroit. Robert Hurst, the bassist, is all over the scene at the moment, is from Detroit. Kareem Riggins is from Detroit. You know, it's just generation after generation keep coming out of the city. So we're very proud of that.
And is it really primarily talent, or is it something more systemic, something in the water, or something more in the education?
Well, it is systemic, and I think that's one of the themes of the film, is that you know, what happened in Detroit and what continues to happen in Detroit is not an accident. It's a result of very particular social, cultural, and economic conditions within the city, within the city's African-American community, and the result of very specific individuals, particularly teachers and mentors, that have nurtured this music for all these years. And that is this unique confluence of elements here in Detroit created this jazz legacy and continues to sustain it. One of the things that is interesting about, if you look at jazz history, is that particularly in the middle of the 20th century, a lot of cities in the North that had large African-American populations had basically golden ages of the music. Think of St. Louis, of Indianapolis, of Cleveland, of Detroit, even places like Buffalo, New York, and Pittsburgh all had very thriving jazz scenes, in addition to sort of the larger cities like Chicago, let's say, or Philadelphia. But over time, those golden ages kind of died out. And yet in Detroit, even as the city's population diminished, and it lost economic power, we continue to produce great jazz musicians decade after decade, sort of punching way above our weight class, if you will. And, you know, there are particular reasons for that. We can talk about them here, that the film tries to explore.
And one of those that is fascinating to me is the education system in Detroit, the public education system, and how supportive that was and how popular it was to teach and inspire young people about, you know, all kinds of music. They have great classical players from Detroit as well.
Well, I say all the time that if you invest in public school music education, you can change the world. And we know that because that's what we did in Detroit. The city from the 1920s on had what was recognized as one of the best public school music education programs in the country that was particularly thriving through the middle of the 20th century. And, kids got started music education in the third grade in public schools. Everybody was able to pick out an instrument. And it was, parents demanded it. And city officials, this education department, everybody sort of believed in the power of music education to create a whole person. And, what that meant was, and one other thing that's really important in Detroit is that those schools in Detroit were integrated by law and from the early part of the 20th century. So that meant that Black kids got the same opportunities as white kids did at some of the best high schools across the city, in particular Cass Tech, which was our sort of arts magnet school, if you will, in those days, in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. And so, Cass Tech is the school that produced Ron Carter and Paul Chambers and Julius Watkins and Lucky Thompson and Donald Byrd and Curtis Fuller and Roland Hanna. And it goes on and on and on and on. And so, and essentially, the really outstanding public school music education programs meant that kids got a great grounding in their instruments and in classical music, and so everybody learned theory, and everybody learned music history, and so the formal training in the schools was extraordinarily strong. Then you combine that with the informal education of mentors on the street, and now in the 1950s, we're talking about the great pianist Barry Harris, who basically taught everyone throughout that entire decade, and so. After school, in the afternoons, Barry was leading these colloquiums, basically, at his house. And this is where Charles McPherson learned how to play, and Lonnie Hillier, the trumpeter, and Joe Henderson, and Paul Chambers, and Curtis Fuller, and Donald Byrd, all the rest of them. Everybody, even Yusef Lateef, who was older than Barry, studied with Barry. So now you've got the formal education. Everybody could play their instruments. Now, combined with the informal education of learning the jazz language on the street from a master in Barry Harris, and all of that is happening within the context of a thriving African-American nightlife and jazz scene. And let's remember that Detroit in the 1950s was the fifth largest city in the country, with nearly 2 million people. And so for a while, it was the fourth largest and the fifth largest. And so it meant that musicians, young musicians, had opportunities to play at night and that you in front of really educated, musically literate, and supportive audiences. That's a very powerful sort of feedback loop and a set of conditions. This is when I was speaking earlier about, well, how did this happen in Detroit? Well, this is what I'm talking about, this unique confluence of elements. And there's a longer history of this that includes the African-American history in Detroit, starting with the Great Migration, the auto industry attracting African-Americans to the North, particularly to Detroit, where the auto industry was paying some of the best wages in the country. That created a thriving, economically, African-American working class and middle class. In fact, Detroit is really on the front edge of creating a Black working and middle class in the whole country. So you know, again, very unique set of circumstances.
Well, this film came out of your book. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the making of the film, your fellow filmmakers on this project as well.
Well, fellow filmmakers, they are the filmmakers. you know, I'm the interloper here and really had to learn what I was doing. But my partners, Daniel Lowenthal and Roberta Friedman, are a filmmaking partnership in New York. And this is their life, is making films. Dan's had a long career in editing Hollywood features and directing documentaries, and he indeed was the director of the film and the editor as well, as well as a co-producer. And Roberta Friedman is a longtime filmmaker, and she was the producer on this film. But she goes back to, I mean, her first job in the industry was working on Star Wars back in the 1970s with George Lucas. And so she has also, and she has a career, she was a part of a pioneering group of video artists in the fine art world in the 1980s, 1970s and 1980s. So they bring this wealth of experience to the table, and we all met through a mutual friend of mine, of ours rather. And I was having dinner with her one night in Urbana, Illinois. And Helen said to me, "Have you ever thought about making a documentary out of your book?" And I said, "No, but that's a great idea." And she said, "Well, look, I have these friends in New York, Daniel Lowenthal, Roberta Friedman. This is what they do. They make films. And so would you like to meet them?" And I said, "Sure." And we got together. We started talking over the phone. I sent them my book. They loved the book. Dan was already a big jazz fan, and Dan has a big, you know, photograph of John Coltrane in his editing room. So that tells you where his mind is. And they both had already worked in Detroit on an experimental film about now we're getting to 13, 14 years ago, So they knew the city some, and they loved it. And, you know, we began talking, and, you know, 5 years later, here we are. But it was, you know, the process of taking what was the book and turning it into a film has really been fascinating for me to watch. A film is a very different medium than a book, and the way you tell the story is really different. And Dan, from the very beginning of the film, the very beginning of our conversations, talked about, you know, marrying the history of Detroit with the music, and having the city become a character in the film, which is something that we tried to do. And that marriage of the city's history and the history of the Black community with the music is something that is in the book, but in the film, it's really in the foreground. And this intertwining of the history and the music, I think, is where the real magic is in the film. And that is the real and the real challenge of making the film, was figuring out how to marry these things in a way that that told the story in a coherent fashion, that did justice to both the history and to the music without reducing either one of them to sort of cliche or in a way that would distort the meaning, which is always a challenge in any kind of storytelling, but particularly on film, where you can't tell everybody's story and you have to be really choosy about how you do it and what you do and the words you use. And so I'm proud of the fact that we were able to do all that, and the way all of that stuff kind of gets married together, that's really Dan, the director. I mean, he's responsible for the visual look of the film, for marrying those elements, you know, in real time in the picture. So that's what I can say about all that.
Well, what's also impressive to me is just the amount of archival interviews. It's sort of a mix of, contemporary interviews, and then there's some historical interviews they all seem part of the same fabric there.
Well, again, part of that is Dan's skill as an editor, And the skill of the storytelling to sort of weave it all together in such a way that you are not always, you're not necessarily conscious that some of the film of the, of, you know, the Yusef Lateef interview, for instance, was, you know, Yusef was passed, a number of people were, like, were passed away before we even started on the film. So marrying, you know, putting all this material together in such a way so that you do not see the seams is part of the magic of great filmmaking, I think. And that's one of the things that Dan, I think, did really, really, really well. Also, I think, you know, there was a consistency about the story we were telling and how we were telling it. And so that everything that comes into the film, when it comes into the film, seems natural in terms of the storytelling. So again, you don't see the seams. And, you know, we were fortunate to be able to interview a number of people before they passed away. I mean, Barry Harris, thank God we were able to get Barry Harris in the fall of 2020. He dies just a year later, and the interview we did with him was his last. You know, we got Sheila Jordan on tape, on film, before Sheila passed away. Now, Sheila just died recently, but, you know, she's fabulous in the film. And, you know, we... The great rock and roll guitarist and co-founder of the MC5 from Detroit, Wayne Kramer, is in the film, and he's brilliant in the film. And we got him before Wayne unexpectedly passed away. So we feel fortunate about all of that. And you know, we did you know, more than 50 of our own interviews with jazz musicians from Detroit, and with historians and musicologists and others to fill out the story. And there are musicians in the film that are not from Detroit. So people like Pat Metheny and Christian McBride and Terrence Blanchard all sort of function as expert commentators and able to sort of step back and reflect on individual musicians and their contribution. So it's, you know, it's great to hear Pat Metheny or Bob Hurst, the bass player, talking about Elvin Jones, or Don Was, who is from Detroit, the president of Blue Note Records. You know, it's great to hear Bob talking about the Detroit jazz tradition, and speaking specifically about Elvin Jones, or the role that Joe Henderson, another Detroiter, played in Don's own education, or to hear Kareem Riggins talking about Elvin, or Metheny talking about Kenny Garrett, or, you know, and on and on and on and on.
Well, before we go, Mark, one of the key things in the storytelling process is to highlight the mentorship. You mentioned Barry Harris, and of course his great protege, Charles McPherson, is sprinkled throughout this movie. But that's really a key point. And then there's the other, Marcus Belgrave has another prime role in this film as well, as part of the mentorship that was established in Detroit for jazz musicians.
No question. When we talk about, you know, how is it that that Detroit not only created this its own jazz legacy, but how it sustained it over the decades, you have to talk about mentorship and the role that in particular Barry Harris played in the 1950s, and then in the 1970s up until his death a decade ago, Marcus Belgrave, the great trumpeter, who formerly with Ray Charles, the role he played, and then the role that the bass player Rodney Whitaker is playing today as the sort of mentor in chief. And what you see in the film is that is this sort of baton of mentorship being passed down over the decades. And so in the 1950s, you know, as we mentioned, Barry is teaching Charles and Joe Henderson and Paul Chambers and Doug Watkins and Donald Byrd and Curtis Fuller and on and on. And then in the 1970s, you know, so many of the important musicians from on the scene today came up under Marcus's wing, the late Jerry Allen, the bassist Bob Hurst, the violinist Regina Carter. These are all the saxophonist Kenny Garrett. These are all what people think of as Marcus's children, in effect, Kareem Riggins as well. And even people like James Carter, who didn't necessarily study directly with Marcus all that much, also, benefited from his influence. And then today, Rodney Whitaker, the bass player, you know, he leads the jazz program at Michigan State University, but he also directs a training ensemble in Detroit called the Gathering Orchestra, which is under the umbrella of a nonprofit called the Carr Center in Detroit. And, many important musicians now have come up under Rodney's wing. So this idea of mentorship, mentorship is an important concept throughout jazz. I mean, you go to any city, there are always folks who are the teachers. But in Detroit, it's really built into the DNA of our jazz legacy is the importance of mentorship. And Rodney, in fact, in the film, talks about how, in Detroit, that you are, socialized basically into the idea that being a mentor is part of your role as a jazz musician by the time you're 15 years old. It's instilled in you that idea. And it's really central to what is special about our jazz legacy in Detroit.
There's also the role of the church in the community that's been a big influence.
No question. I mean, the role of the Black church in general in the history of African American music cannot be overstated. And in Detroit, so many musicians got their first taste of playing music and the idea of sort of improvisation in the church. And we have, Rodney Whitaker talks about that for himself, and the Johnny O'Neill, the great pianist on the scene today from Detroit, talks about the role of playing gospel music as a kid and how that influenced his music. And then we see in a clip, actually, we hear him playing the blues you can see him sort of hand clapping as he's playing. And it's a direct reflection of coming out of the church. And India Owens also talks about bass playing and the beat of and the hump in Detroit swing coming out of the church. And Daniel Lowenthal, director, has a great sequence in the film where he juxtaposes the hand clapping and almost ring shout like quality of a gospel church service with jazz playing. So you see the direct connection in the film.
It also doesn't hurt that Motown became a worldwide smash sensation, if that's not redundant. But all the musicians were jazz musicians in the house band there.
Yes, as Lars Bjorn, who's the author of a book called Before Motown, which is the history of jazz in Detroit from 1900 to 1960, as Lars says in the film, without jazz musicians, Motown would not have existed, because all of the musicians that played were basically on all those records were all jazz musicians. And we highlight James Jamerson, the great Motown bass player, as a perfect example of this. And, before James Jamerson played on every Motown hit you can name, he was a kid learning to playing the upright bass at Northwestern High School in a little after-school band with Charles McPherson on alto and Roy Brooks on drums and Lonnie Hillier on trumpet. And he was studying, James Jamerson was studying bebop with Barry Harris. So all that is in the Motown sound, without a doubt.
The film is the best of the best, Jazz from Detroit, now available from Amazon Prime, also on YouTube TV and Google Play. And I've been speaking with the co-creator. Would that be a comfortable title for you on that one?
Absolutely.
Co-creator, absolutely. Mark Stryker, who's also the author of the book that stimulated this film. And that book is Jazz from Detroit, also available. Where can people get that book?
Jazz from Detroit is available through, as people say, your finer bookstores, and you can order. You can also order that through online services. And I can tell people, too, that we have an updated paperback edition of the book that's coming out in February. So people can look for that. And people can look for the film, obviously, on Prime Video. But we are also taking the film around the country to the best we can and showing it. We're going to be in upstate New York soon, and we're going to be in Bloomington, Indiana soon, and we're talking with people in New York City and in Washington, D.C. and in San Francisco and in other places, and we hope to be actually in San Diego as well. So we'll see where we go here in the next 6 months to a year.
Well, congratulations on this great accomplishment. It's a wonderful film to watch for any jazz fan or any historian who wants to know more about Detroit as well. Mark Stryker, really appreciate you being with us on Inside Art.
Thank you so much.
The best of the best, Jazz from Detroit, is now streaming on Prime Video, YouTube TV, and Google Play, and available to rent or purchase at primevideo.com. You can also learn more about Mark Stryker's book, Jazz from Detroit, at jazzfromdetroit.com. Coming up, we'll meet the composer of a spellbinding multimedia song cycle inspired by America's tragic history of cotton. Damian Jeter joins us next as Inside Art continues here on San Diego's Jazz 88.3. Funding for Inside Art comes from the members of Jazz 88.3, where your support brings the joy and history of jazz and all of the arts to San Diego. To become a member, visit jazz88.org/donate.